And welcome back to the last episode of the Two Soup Special at the Cinema season.
Cinema. The very last one.
The last part of the last sin. I'm the butt, and I'm here with T,
What's up, guys?
And we're here to talk about, well, I'm just going to say my pick was There Will Be Blood, so this that's what we're going to be talking about, but before we get into talking about that movie, we are going to follow a tradition by talking about what we've been watching lately, talk a little bit about what we've been watching lately. And T, did you want to get us started?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start. I guess I'm probably the only of one of like five people who have access to Apple Plus, but because I don't know anyone who has a subscription to that app. I don't know. It's like Paramount. It's like no one has these things. But luckily, my brother-in-law has a subscription, and so I got onto it. And I watched, like, I think in a day or two days, just finished out Ted Lasso. And it's really good. I mean, if it's about an American football, high school football coach comes over to England to coach a football club.
And Ted Lasso is played by...
you had to say that. Jason Sudeikis. Yeah, Ted Lasso is played by Jason Sudeikis. There's a couple other people in it, more British stars. Him and his assistant coach Beard are, like, I think, the only Americans in the show. But just briefly, he goes over there and he gets hired on because the owner of the football club, it was given to her as kind of like a joke mock divorce separation gift type of thing by her husband, because her husband used to own the team, and she just wanted it to fail. So she hired the least most capable or person with any kind of resume in football, and they chose an American high school football coach, like American football coach. But the story ends up dealing with a lot of just him, like he's going through a divorce, and it deals with panic attacks a lot, because he suffers from panic attacks.
So it's funny, but it's also somewhat serious.
The writing's really good in it. It is definitely a comedy show, but like most comedies, they'll deal with some serious, touchy stuff here and there. But the fact that they deal with panic attacks, and I think it's really hard for creators or directors or anyone to like have on camera what a panic attack is and feels like. It's really hard to get that. Like, it's like, you know, like whenever, like, in Fear and Loathing, whenever they're high, it's like, that's not what happens when you're high, you know? Like, I think the only thing that was accurate was whenever they were on LSD and they were in the
melting carpets is a thing.
The melting carpets thing, yeah. That's about it. Everything else is just kind of, you don't see people as, like, dinosaur lizard people and shit like that, you know? Maybe Hunter S. Thompson did, who knows?
Maybe you just aren't getting good shit.
Well, I guess not, man. I gotta fucking call my plug. The way they do the panic attacks is very good, because it makes me feel kind of claustrophobic. Heartbeat racing, the sound kind of pitching and changing sound, like the difference. It's good. Juno Temple's in it. She's great as well.
Oh. And what else has she been in again?
She was in Killer Joe, which was not Frank Darabont, but the guy that directed The Exorcist.
William Friedkin?
Friedkin. Yeah, and it's kind of like a Kentucky Fried movie. There's a lot of people in that. There's McConaughey. He played Speed Racer and also Into the Wild. What's his name?
I don't know his name either.
Oh, man. He's Emil Hirsch?
Yeah, Emil Hirsch, yes.
Yeah, he's in it as well. It's good. It's about kind of like, you know, don't throw grandma or throw grandma off a train. It's about like killing, you know, like, your parent or whatever, but trying to get away with it, so they hire a hitman and Killer Joe. Anyways, we're getting off the Ted Lasso thing. But yeah, she's in that, and she's in a few other things. She was, I believe, she was the kid in Atonement that found them having sex. I don't know if you ever seen Atonement.
No.
Beautiful film. But yeah. Well, yeah, what about you, man? What have you been watching?
I watched this movie that I've heard about for a while and never really had the guts to watch it up until recently, but it was called Urosudidochi, something like that. It's the legend.
Legend of the Urosudidochi.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I wrote a paper on that.
Yeah. So I've never seen it up until recently.
Okay, cool.
So it's, if nobody knows what it's about, it's it actually has a plot, believe it or not.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a post-apocalyptic film. Yeah.
It's a plot about the three realms of man, beast, and demon, and that every 3,000 years there's a legend that the Overfiend will come and merge the three realms together to create some super city, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it follows these two characters, one who's just like a pervert human guy, and then the other person's a beast man character who has like magic powers and stuff. And they essentially, the beast man believes that this guy's high school rival, who's like a basketball captain, he believes he's the Overfiend because he can sense the Overfiend or whatever. Mm-hmm. And his sister is also on the lookout for the Overfiend, but it turns out to be this other character who I don't remember these characters' names.
Yeah, a lot happens in that movie very quickly.
But yes, a lot does happen in that movie very quickly.
And by the way, it's X-rated, a Japanese anime.
It's X-rated anime.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's not the birth of hentai, but it gets there.
It was one of the first hentais, I believe, to come to the States anyways. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously famous for, like, the tentacles in it.
Yep.
And, yeah. So it gets pretty graphic in the film, but it keeps your attention just because of the hypersexuality, the hyperviolence. Like, it's just really grabs you by the collar, doesn't let go.
No, once it starts, man. I remember just that, I think it's the first scene with, like, one of the demons, like, one of, like, the sexual demons that he goes in with a teacher. I think she's a teacher. And
yeah,
she turns into one of them.
She turns into a demon.
And it's just, oof, old boy.
And then, yeah, she it's not for kiddies, but it's got, it's just the violence that really kind of fascinates me the most about it.
Because the animated violence is really cool.
Because it's so over the top and gory, and it's monsters and demons fighting each other. It's pretty awesome. And they really don't hold back on the imagination as far as like where they take things in the three parts that mm-hmm. there are.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much the only like new thing to me that I've been watching lately.
I'm glad you got around to watching it. Cause I have it on my, hard drive and it's.
My apologies for not even knowing how to pronounce the name.
Yeah, it's difficult as hell. I don't even know how to pronounce it right.
Urotsukyoji or whatever.
Urokidodoju, something like that. It's like, yeah, it's... but I really find it fascinating, though, that the reason why, like, these animated films, like, they have, you know, what's it called? In Japan, they have, like, viewership laws to where, like, you can't show nudity in certain things, especially like in the sexual way.
Mm.
You know, like if you watch like Japanese porn or even seen it's blurred out, like any kind of...
Yes,
you know.
I noticed that there were certain scenes that were kind of like blurred, but you could still tell what was going on.
But I think like with anime, they kind of were like, let's get away with it because it's not exactly real people. And so there is a lot of nudity, there is a lot of violence. Censorship laws, that's what they're called, not viewership laws. But they censor a lot of stuff in Japan, and I think with stuff like hentai and like anime, they're allowed to get away with so much more. It's kind of like horror film, you mm-hmm. know, like they're allowed to kind of like touch on topics that, you know, people don't really be like, oh yeah, this is what the film's about, where it's like, it's about rape.
I did feel like a perv watching it, but at the same time, I was just kind of enthralled with just the cartoonish elements of it.
Yeah, I think if anyone is a fan of anime out there, they should definitely give it a gander, just because it was made in 87, 88?
Yeah, and in fact, the version that I have, Penthouse Video put it out.
Ha! Wow. Ugh.
That was the company that distributed this film, was Penthouse Video.
So yeah, I think it came out after Akira, I think. I'm not 100% sure. It came out around the same time.
It was probably made around the same time, but the animation... It's hard to... Oh, man, I would definitely say Akira surpasses it as far as animation
quality. Well, Akira still holds up today as one of the most beautiful movies ever.
Yeah, like the animation isn't beautiful in the movie, but it's still, I don't know, it's visceral. It's certainly visceral.
It's very visceral. Oh, yeah. Talking about, you know, a big old Venus flytrap mouth biting your crotch. That's one scene.
Yeah.
And then 30 tentacles go into someone's, you know, private hoo-ha.
Well, let's not give away the plot.
That's the first 30 minutes.
Let's let people watch this film if they can access it. I was able to get it off the Pirate Bay pretty easily.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I think that's where I downloaded it from. Pretty sure.
But anyway, speaking of pirates, let's get right into our movie.
Let's get into There Will Be Blood with all the pirates.
Yeah, with all the pirates in this movie. So, the reason why I picked There Will Be Blood for The Sin of Greed, to best represent The Sin of Greed, we didn't even discuss what the season was about yet. I failed to mention that this is about us selecting movies that we believe best represent each of the seven deadly sins. Mm-hmm. We are on The Sin of Greed. If you haven't listened to the last episode, you should, which we did The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, which was a pretty good episode.
Yeah.
But this is our final episode of the season. There will be no more episodes about the cinema, for now, anyway.
Unless they come out with new sins.
Unless some new sins
come
out.
Unless the Pope's just like...
It's like, you know, rape's been sitting around for a while. I've been meaning to put that on the list.
Oh, man. Yeah, sure.
But anyways... The reason I picked There Will Be Blood for Greed is because the movie is such a character study of Daniel Plainfield. You know, he's such an amazingly fleshed out character due to like both the direction of Paul Thomas Anderson and the acting of Daniel Day-Lewis. Obviously Daniel Day-Lewis gets the credit for portraying him, but
mm-hmm. It's Daniel Day-Lewis's, it's probably his best performance.
Yeah. I would
think besides that, the Butcher in Gangs of New York.
I would say this would be. I think this would surpass the Billy the Butcher, just simply because.
Yeah.
There was just so much.
It was more about. It was more about. His character.
Yes, he knew that the entire film had something to do with every scene had something to do with his character, and so he tried to portray the mannerisms and the way he spoke in the best to his ability. I heard that he listened to old recordings of people from the 1920s to try to get the way that they talked. And
mm-hmm.
This was just a really fascinating movie. It was only $25 million to make it.
That's right. It's only $25 million.
But it still looks very high quality. Like, they didn't skimp on the cinematography at all, which it won an Oscar for.
Yeah, yeah. Robert Elgis or something. I forgot his last name, but a cinematographer that he's worked with, you know, he was the same cinematographer he worked with Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Hard Eight.
Yeah.
So PTA also obviously has faith in him.
Yeah, but this movie is all about greed, in my opinion. It's about this self-determined character who doesn't really give up in his early quest for oil. As we see in the beginning of the film, where he's mining in this big, long ditch that he's dug.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, that's not the first scene. The first scene is where he's digging for oil, and that's where he accidentally... Or there's an accident that happens, and it kills that other guy, right?
That's not the very first scene. So the very first scene is whenever it's him by himself. Okay. And he's just kind of doing this stuff out of his like own volition by himself.
Yeah.
He goes around... the first scene is him, he's building the hole, he's digging, and he has the dynamite, and he's trying to get the bucket up from the top with all the materials in after he lights the dynamite, and it doesn't, and it blows up, and then he finds, you know...
like a silver vein, right?
Yeah, an iron ore, or something like that. He finds some kind of, like, mineral... and then he breaks his leg again. When he's by himself as well.
Now that's I wanted to pause right there because I felt like it was really interesting how, in spite of the situation he was in, he was still able to drag himself out of it to safety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he was a self-determined person, but he this determination changes in the film as it goes on. Obviously, his relationship with HW, his adopted son, really kind of forges this new identity for him because he wants to be more relatable, I think.
I think he's still just, I think still 100% though, like, he's just in it for, like, the money and the wealth.
Yeah.
There are things that shape him across that period of time, because his adopted son, HW, it's the person who did die in the well shaft. The huge drilling component gets, it breaks or something like that.
Just their shoddy
on him. Yeah.
Construction they
set. Oh, it's terrible. It's like one of the worst OSHA violations I've ever seen in my life. but yeah, so he eventually gets people. He's able to hire these people to mine and help him. He acquires HW through the death of, like, someone on his, on that oil rig. And do you think that, like, he felt that, like, he is the one who should take care of this child because his father died, and, like, he just put it up to himself to be like, this is my responsibility.
I think he felt responsible for the death of that child's birth father.
Yeah.
And I think he took it, but I think he saw an opportunity in that to kind of take this little boy under his wing and give him, you know, not only provide for him, but the boy provides this kind of identity for Daniel.
Right. They use it as like a family business, right? Yeah. Eventually, like, you know, this is a family business. This is my son, HW. Like, you know?
Yeah. And so he's not, I think at the beginning, he's still having trouble finding places to drill.
I think he's trying to find the honeypot. He's trying to, like, find, like, some place to where he doesn't have to go through, I forgot what the company's name that they mentioned a lot, but, like, you know, the people who, like, travel with the oil, like the transportation companies, like Pacific Oil is what it is.
Okay.
And he wants to kind of get out of that business to where, like, it wants to just be him as the business. He doesn't want to have to deal with people to transport the oil, to process the oil, to do all this other stuff. He's trying to cut out all these middlemen to where you can just get the most money.
Right.
And he's trying to find that well of a oil
and pit. Then he gets word from, I believe it's the brother's name is Jesse.
Eli's brother,
yeah. Maybe.
I don't know. Is it Jesse?
That
doesn't sound right. That's the name of that's the name of the cow. And Curb. It sounds made up.
Well, anyways, his younger brother, Eli's a character who we haven't met yet. His younger brother comes to Daniel, and then for profit, he tells him that there's this big well of oil underneath his family's ranch.
It just seeps out of the ground, that's what he says.
And so he gives him word to go seek it out, and sure enough, it's oil coming out of the ground out there. And he strikes a deal with Eli and his family to drill by the well. But Eli is a minister at a small sect church that he leads nearby his family. I don't know if it's nearby the family ranch. The church.
I think I think he wants to become a minister. I think.
Yeah.
We don't really know the story of Eli prior to Daniel showing up. And so what I'm thinking, like, Eli does is he goes to town and, like, preaches type of thing.
Mm.
And he just knows people. And then I think actually having a church, like an actual, you know, brick and mortar, it's more, you know, like, oh, this actually is a legitimate religion. You know, it's not like, you know, some crazy person yelling on the street, right?
And so, this Eli turns out to be Daniel's, like, main, his least favorite person.
Apparently. They're nemesis is for sure.
Yeah. And Eli also eventually turns on Daniel as well, but because he's a man of God, he doesn't resort to the same sort of measures that Daniel would measure.
He does it by making Daniel repent for his sins, right?
Well, before that, he tries to ask Daniel for the money, and then Daniel just beats him in front of his friends.
Yeah, whenever they're walking, like, on the fields, yeah.
And Eli has to come home covered in mud and
covered in oil.
Well, yeah, oil and mud, and he's there's that really awkward scene where he's at the dinner table with his father, and he's still caked in mud, and
he's like, "You are a old shallow man." We're talking about his dad, you know, or like, I forgot like, the exact quote, but he just starts like kind of
you're grilling a stupid on him. Man.
Yeah, I you're think a stupid he says. Man.
Man, such a great performance from, oh God, now his name escapes.
Paul Dano.
Paul Dano, thank you.
And Paul is the name of the brother.
Paul is the name of the brother, who was also played by Paul Dano, which wasn't originally supposed to happen, but they changed their mind.
But yeah, dude, there's so much in this movie. Like we haven't even scratched the surface about talking about this film. Like we're just talking about kind of like the major players, and then we get into old man. Why did I just blank on his name?
What, the guy that plays his brother?
His quote brother.
Yeah, his what is that actor's name? So-called brother.
Oh my God!
From The Mummy.
I know, he's so good. In this film, but yeah, there's a guy that shows up claiming to be Daniel Plainview's brother.
Yeah, once he starts getting successful in the
world
business,
the paper and stuff like that. It's portrayed by Kevin J. O'Connor, and you know they go in together. He helps out Daniel Plainview a lot with He helps out Daniel with, I guess, like, you know, figuring out the structure of the Sunday Ranch that they own now, with, you know, all the piping that they're leading out to the ocean for the transporting, you know, places to dig, because his brother, you know, Daniel's quote-unquote brother, who plays his brother, is worked in the oil business as well, and so they go around surveying the land, But we find out that through H.W. reads this character's journal, and basically it's just all the stuff. This identity's been stolen, you know.
Yep. And then he tries to burn him alive in his sleep.
Yeah.
But then Daniel's not having it, and then eventually the truth comes out, and the thing is like Daniel has shared so much with this person who he believed to be his brother, because there's this very pivotal speech in the film where Daniel explains how he doesn't like people and that he's in a constant competition with everybody else, then he has to win, he doesn't want anybody else to win.
They say that scene that you just said is like one of the best acting scenes in all of cinema, or it's just like it is just a take of him by the fire.
You know? Yeah, and it's not a whole lot of dialogue either.
It's just the facial expressions and him kind of like, you know, coming out and just like, this is Daniel right here. This is that character. That's what he wants.
And so he's trying to redeem, I think he's trying to be redeemed through this relationship with his brother, so he doesn't have to be purely alone in this, you know, this, like he was at the beginning of the film when he's mining for ore.
Yeah. Because he doesn't have a wife, doesn't have a girlfriend,
no kids.
Nothing in the film ever indicates that he is any kind of like, you know, player. He, you know, has relationships with multiple women. Like, he is focused 100% on his job and duty and himself. He's a very selfish person.
Well, he's definitely a narcissist. He's definitely completely self-absorbed.
And so, in the speech, and then
everybody else is just a player in his life.
But he ends up killing his so-called brother, because it's not his brother.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
shoots him in the head.
It's kind of crazy how death follows Daniel Plainview from the beginning of the film where, you know, he faces death himself when he breaks his leg, but obviously he is able to soldier through that, to one of the workers on his mining crew dying, to, this, where he actually takes this man's life with his own hands. And then he just realizes he's overcome with loneliness and grief over what he's done after he's dug this 6-foot deep hole in the ground to put this body in, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't even call it a 6-foot.
Yeah, maybe it was a semi-shallow
grave. Yeah. And then I think after that, that's whenever his alcoholism just gets really bad.
Correct.
Because I think he's just trying to forget what he has done in his life. And especially killing a fucking human being.
Right.
And it turns him into a bitter old man eventually.
Yes. Well, not only that, but it's just that when he gets everything he asked for and then he realizes he's still not fulfilled...
Mm-hmm.
He turns to alcoholism. He becomes this very weird, isolated character who just lives in this mansion all by himself.
Shooting China with a rifle.
Right. Yeah. Just completely self-destructive behavior. And then, of course, we lead to the final scene, the milkshake scene.
Oh, yes.
Where...
Oh, yes.
Paul Dano returns to try and get what's coming to him, and he certainly does get what's coming to him.
He tries to get, the money from the oil derrick. His proportion of, the agreed amount. And we have the famous line.
Yeah, well, he's still under the impression that there's still oil there.
That's right! He wants him to dig more and more there.
But he drank his milkshake.
I drink your milkshake. I put my straw all the way down.
Love it.
It's so good, man. And he ends up, I love it because he kills Eli Sunday with a bowling ball pin. And then after that scene, it's just, I'm finished, and the movie ends.
He is finished.
He finally got what I guess he wanted in the most part.
Well,
he doesn't want people better.
Realizes that there's nothing else left in his life that's worth giving a shit about, that he's gotten everything he worked for, and he still wasn't fulfilled, and I guess in that moment of just like, well, I'm spent. Yeah. I think that's what he meant. It's like, I'm completely spent, and his greed is at that point completely consumed him.
Well, yeah, and I also think it's just because he doesn't want other individuals bettering, either just individually, like in society, or just people being better than him that he knows.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave Eli that chance to be successful with the church. And then I think after he killed him, he was just like, man, I feel good now. I'm done. Yeah, man, it's
such a great film. It turned out to be Paul Thomas Anderson's most profitable movie.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Even to this day.
I mean, it's up there. It was supposed to win the Oscar, but No Country ended up winning.
Right. It was nominated for Best Picture, but it did not win. But it won Best Actor and Best Cinematographer.
Right. So I have a couple of things, some technical talk about this.
There's a lot of interesting technical talk
about this. Oh my god, there's so much. This film, dude. So, for only $25 million, what they achieved with this film is just beyond repair, because the fact of the scene with the oil derrick burning and erupting, I found out, because I finally watched a video of it, and the substance they used to make the oil erupt from the derrick was...
The stuff to catch fire?
Yeah, I'm talking about like whenever they burned it. Was actually the same substance and quality of stuff that goes into your chocolate syrup that is being made, that McDonald's uses for their milkshakes.
Yeah.
Which brings the whole thing milkshake again.
Yeah.
They only had one take for that. They didn't, build it. They were going to veneer the whole oil derrick. And so they could reuse it over and over again, but PTA was just like, let it burn.
Yeah.
Let it burn. Let's get the real effect of this thing.
That's so cool.
The Coen brothers were in town because this movie was filmed, not mostly, but the areas whenever they're out in the desert or the rock desert was mostly all filmed in Marfa.
Mm-hmm.
They were just trying to scout locations in California and just couldn't find something that looked like 1920s California. So they had to go out further and further.
Right. Well, they shot in Marfa for like 3 months.
Yeah, there was only 60 days of filming for this movie. So they shot in Marfa. I don't know what percentage of that was shot. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I heard that they picked Marfa because they still had like... these big mine shafts still dug in the ground around there.
Yeah, no, and it's so and it still looks untouched by, you know, Western society. It's not very, you know, there's not like a Burger King or, you know, like a Walmart there. I've been to Marfa once. The only store that's kind of, I guess, big is they have a Dollar General. That's it. They don't even have a fast food place there.
Tiny.
Yeah, oh, it's very tiny. But the Coen brothers were there at the same exact time filming No Country for Old Men.
Crazy.
And the Coen brothers, like, apparently there's, I don't know if this is true or not, but PTA went in to open up his hotel room whenever they were scouting, and apparently, like, the Coen brothers were there, like, in the hotel room next to him, and they were like, this town isn't big enough for the both of us. So the Coen brothers bought up every single hotel room at that only hotel, just so they could have it themselves. But they, that was whenever he was in pre-production, and they were going to be finished in Marfa in a week's time, so it was like perfect for him to be like, all right, cool, they'll be gone, and we'll be able to film. Apparently, some shots of the oil derrick burning ruined a lot of takes from No Country for Old Men, so they had, like, rat for days, you know, to, like, be like, what the hell's going on over there? Yeah, it's really, it's crazy that those two movies who were No Country won Best Picture, but those two movies were filmed in the same area.
Yeah, that's wild.
At the same time of year, all that stuff, yeah. I think it's cool. but yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff that, you know, and these also, like, the PTA works, he's one of the few directors that still works with film. He doesn't do digital.
I noticed the camera's not as, like, mobile as it is in, like, say, Boogie Nights, where it's, like, following people.
I mean, he's still shot in film in Boogie Nights.
Yeah, but the camera, the cameras are just, like, they're kind of, like, more static, that they don't move around.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's maybe a couple scenes where they have them on tracks.
During the scenes that don't have dialogue in them, anyway.
Yeah, they're just very, yeah.
Because I noticed that a lot of the scenes with dialogue were in close-ups.
Mm-hmm. So they're extreme close-ups.
Yeah.
But yeah. I guess the only other thing is that PTA's new film, Licorice Pizza, comes out the 26th.
Well, maybe it won't be new by the time this podcast comes out or by the time people listen to this podcast, but it's new to us at this point in time anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's it comes out in select theaters on the 26th, and then worldwide, countrywide, whatever you can call it, Christmas Day. So I'm gonna go see it Christmas Day probably.
Let me know how it is.
I've seen every PTA film in theaters ever since I was of age to go see a PTA film. So, but yeah, PTA's still wanting. He's trying to get Daniel Day-Lewis to come out of retirement too.
Huh.
Because Daniel Day-Lewis's last film was with PTA, The Phantom Thread.
Yeah.
And he wants him to work with him again. So.
That would be awesome if he.
It would be lovely.
It would have to be an epic project, though.
It would.
Because, man, I didn't think Lincoln was all that great, even though he did a great job as playing Lincoln.
It's a biopic of a guy that we read about in high school. It's whatever. I'm not going to be like.
Did you, you know, while I was researching this film, I found out that it had a connection to our other Greed film.
It does.
Because Paul Thomas Anderson apparently watched The Treasure of the Sierra Madre every night.
He actually gave...
while making this movie.
Yeah, he gave Daniel Day-Lewis a copy of it to watch and to analyze the dialogue, too. Because the dialogue in that film is so important for that time period. Which, the time period we didn't talk about, I think 1888 to 1920s around. That's like kind of like the period that this takes place in. Also, another huge influence on this film was Giant with James Dean, which was also shot in Marfa.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's also about oil as well. So,
yeah, as far as like other movies I was thinking about for Greed, Wall Street was one of them.
Great.
Wolf of Wall Street as well. Those were
the Wall Street movies.
The Wall Street movies, yeah. I mean,
Trading Places. No, I'm joking.
The Goonies was another film I consider.
Really?
Just because, like, it's... But it doesn't really represent the sin as well as There Will Be Blood. Not by a long shot.
Would you talk more about the Fratellis in that case? I don't know.
Yeah. But that's all that I have to say about the film.
And we don't have any, you know, teasers for the next episode because we don't know what the hell we're doing.
But we just want to want to thank you all for listening to the podcast. If you haven't listened to any of our past episodes, please go listen to them. And be wary of the audio quality of some of them. But but they are still good episodes. I like them a lot. I'm proud of the work we've done. And we hope to see you again at the cinema.
Yeah, thanks, guys.